entertained? Are you not entertained?
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
You're listening to the French Press Podcast, where we discuss events from our lives. Welcome to the French Press Podcast. This is episode 191.
And it's Tuesday, July 11th, 2017.
Mr. Dave is here with us. Mr. Dave.
Hello, everyone.
And Jeffy, you're back from Europe.
That I am.
Jeffy doesn't have a mic, but I'm happy to say because of the Amazon earnings we've been pulling in over the last few months, we do have enough money to purchase an additional microphone.
Sweet. Now I don't feel left out.
So now if we have four...
Thank you, fans.
If we have four people, you'll be able to hear Jeff's soft voice. And yeah. You can tell us a little bit about Europe as well, Jeff. Today, of course, Mr. Dave is here, so we'll get to another weird story from history. If we have time, we'll talk about Leighton's honeymoon. And Well, you had promised it last week.
Yeah, I did. And so I feel like it should be... I feel like that should take priority.
You can't have that take priority if Mr. Dave is in the room.
This is true.
I feel honored. I really do.
Real quickly, earnings from the last few months. For May, we earned a whopping $32.22.
Good land!
Man.
People. And in June, we made $42.82.
Where are these earnings coming from?
It's a small percentage, but every little bit counts and helps. Oh, unlike your vote. And... So let's just jump right into it. Mr. Dave, can you introduce your story and we'll dive right in?
Sure. All right. So those who forget the past are liable to trip over it. Now, in 2014, in Lumbee, British Columbia, which is about 215 miles north of the U.S. border, some forestry workers stumbled upon a 70-year-old Japanese balloon bomb. Now, in the 1940s, there was a secret plot by the Japanese to send balloon bombs towards North America. And I actually have a picture of it. So there's what the balloon bomb looked like. Essentially, it's just a large balloon. They were actually made out of paper that was made from the bark of trees. And then down at the bottom, instead of a basket or a nice gift, was a bomb. Now, the bombs actually had a bunch of different like sensors and tubes full of powder and triggering devices and things. For example, if they would go too high or too low in the air, they were rigged to like do different things, either drop ballast off or like release hydrogen or something, and it kept them really steady. Now, you might be thinking, wait. The Japanese were sending bombs in balloons, but they had realized that during the winter, there's an airstream that sweeps eastward across the Pacific Ocean. And so they realized that if they would send these balloons up, they would literally go from Japan across the Pacific Ocean, and then after about 3 days, then they would be over the United States. And so they rigged the bombs to about after 3 days, they would like drop these bombs. And it would also, once the bombs got dropped, it would light a fuse, and eventually the whole balloon would self-destruct.
Oh my goodness.
Now, the whole thing was about 33 feet in diameter. It could lift about 1,000 pounds for the balloon part. And then the bomb actually had a 64-foot-long fuse that would burn for over 80 minutes before it would go off. And I'm not exactly sure why. Now, here's another picture of the actual bomb part of it.
Oh, wow.
It just has a bunch of different tubes and timers, but it was really advanced for the time.
And it wouldn't have been electronic.
No, I mean, it was electronic in a rough way, but it was just various sensors and things. I mean, mainly mechanical.
Okay.
In nature. But yeah, so they set these off. The whole project was actually called Fugo, which... actually, I'm not sure what that means. I saw it somewhere, but anyways. But yeah, so they were sending these bombs over. Now, the main point was to set fire, like start forest fires.
Oh.
Because they're going to go over the Pacific, and then, you know, on the West Coast, you've got a lot of forests and things. So they were hoping to set these forest fires, you know, just create havoc. I mean, at any point, your forest could be on fire. And they were hoping to, like, dampen morale and kind of just disrupt the U.S. And keep in mind, this was 1944, so it was towards the end of the war. They were kind of trying anything at this point. Now, they also, and I'm not sure how close they got, but they also were getting close to having biological weapons. And there would have been the potential of combining these two technologies and actually dropping, you know, balloon bombs full of biological weapons onto the United States. So all of a sudden, in late 1944, people start seeing these weird things floating through the sky in the western United States. For example, folks at a coal mine in Thermopolis, Wyoming, saw a parachute in the air. They heard flares, and then they heard a whistling sound and saw an explosion. And it basically just kind of, you might see a little explosion here and there. They saw some in Montana, and, you know, they would go up and kind of the local sheriff would go and investigate, and then they'd call the FBI and things. And they realized, well, it seems like it's Japanese, but where are these things coming from? And they actually started finding them along the coast. Also, there was about, the Japanese shot off somewhere between 6,000 and 9,000. We only know of about 300 that actually made it to America. But the biggest mystery was, how are they getting them here? Mm-hmm. Because to us, it seemed crazy that they would launch from Japan and make it all the way over here. And so they thought maybe submarines were coming in and then like sending in little landing parties. They were setting them off, you know, on the West Coast, and they were floating over. Well, eventually, you know, these scientists kind of figured out what they were, and they actually, Americans shot down a few of them in fighter planes, but they're actually pretty fast once they get in that air current. And so they were pretty hard to, like, shoot down. You could just patrol the entire time. And to keep the Japanese from hearing about this, there was very few news articles about these bombs, because they said, hey, this is to, you know, we don't want them to know that it's working. And so keep it very hush-hush. And so there was very little reported about it, which is why we don't really know that much about it. And so it actually worked, because the Japanese assumed that they weren't working, that they weren't getting to America, so they just stopped sending them, even though they were, some of them weren't making it over.
So when they exploded, they were causing damage and maybe even forest fires?
I don't know if there were any major fires, but they were, some of them were exploding. Okay. Some of them, when they land, didn't explode, but there definitely were some that would. There weren't many casualties. In fact, there's only one incident when people were killed. And in the spring of 1945, there was a couple, and they had taken their Sunday school class out for a picnic in Oregon. And they, the husband was parking the car, and the wife and the kids from the class got out, and they're walking around the forest trying to find like a picnic area or something. And they see this weird-looking bomb, but they didn't know what it was. Well, you know how 13-year-old boys are. You got to go over and mess with this stuff. And it seems like one of them probably kicked the bomb, and it actually went off and killed five kids and the wife.
Hold
it. Yeah, so it was kind of tragic. And the park is actually named after them today. It's Mitchell Park. So anyway, so there was only one time when it actually went off and killed someone.
So, and you always seen the movies when a bomb drops and doesn't go off, people kind of wait back in anticipation, and then eventually, if it doesn't go off, they walk over to it, and there's nothing to it. But I guess you should be careful.
Right, right, exactly. Another close call was when a balloon bomb actually hit a power line in Washington State that cut off all the electricity for a manufacturing plant where the U.S. was manufacturing plutonium for our own nuclear bomb. So that could have been bad, but anyways, fail-safes kicked in. It was all good. So after the war, people started saying, hey, I think I found one of these, or hey, I think I saw these. Some of them landed in Nebraska.
Hold it.
And there were actually some up. There was one in Grand Rapids, and one that made it all the way to Detroit, which is as far east as it made it. But, I mean, they could have been floating over our county, or over our area, definitely. And over the years, people keep finding them. They found one in 1953 and 1955 in Alaska, and some in Canada. In 1984, an author and researcher said that he had found 45 of them in Oregon, 37 in Alaska, 28 in Washington, and 25 in California. So he had done a lot of research trying to find them. The latest one, like I said, was found in 2014. And it had been in British Columbia, just laying there in the dirt for 70 years.
Wow.
And so they decided it's way too dangerous to move, so they put some C4 on either side and just blew it up in a controlled explosion.
Artifact.
So now, if you would like to see one, there is a fully intact balloon bomb in the Canadian War Museum in Ottawa. So that's all the history of the Japanese balloon bomb.
And probably if the Japanese would have known that, oh, they're reaching and getting there, they probably would have gotten a lot better
absolutely.
At releasing them, as when to release them, and mm-hmm. and even the mechanics as far as detonation and whatnot.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Wow. I had heard about it, but I never heard that any of them even landed.
Yeah. Yeah. I had never heard of them.
Wow. So. That is really cool. And also, yeah, that's really... To think they were able to do that back before so much of the technology we mm-hmm. have today. I mean, that was... Mm-hmm. I mean, wasn't it World War II where they really just started using planes for the first time? Or was it World War
I? I think it was World War I. The end of it, maybe, but...
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, that is really interesting. Any questions or thoughts from you guys, Leighton, Jeff?
Just pointing out that, like, while they were trying to use the weather to, like, cause, you know, havoc in America, in the meantime, America was just busy just, like, flying atomic bombs over, like, whether or not the wind permitted.
It wasn't weather permitting.
So, in one hand, you have to think, wow, the Japanese, they're very resourceful. And then, on the other hand, you have to think, man, America just gets it done.
And so these were released during World War II?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, towards the end of World War II.
Okay. Let's, Leighton, I guess since you're so adamant about getting to your honeymoon,
yeah.
What did you want to share?
Well, pretty much, it just, so much happened that it'd be impossible to say, like, everything that we saw and visited, and, yeah, it would be a lot. And so I'll just go over some of the highlights. But to start off with, I thought that the trip kind of started off on a rough note, because we had a we headed up to Chicago, and then we had a flight from Chicago to Cincinnati, and then from Cincinnati to Boston. So we had one connecting flight, and the flight from Chicago to Boston or to Cincinnati was fine, but then once we were in Cincinnati, our flight got delayed 1 hour. Then 2 hours, then 3 hours, and then it's like, oh my word, they like finally said that we're actually gonna go. But it turns out that Boston was getting some bad weather. So we finally get on the plane, and we're like finally on our way, and I'm like, oh yes, good. Like, I mean I like to, it's not that I am that much of a worrywart, maybe I am. But it's like when I have something like in place that like I'm looking forward to and I want to surprise Carrie with, it's like I want to make sure that that happens. And so, and I had a cool Airbnb, obviously I didn't set it up, but you know, I had it reserved, and I couldn't wait to like for her to see it. And we get on the plane, we take off, and I'm like, yes, okay, like, we won't have to spend the night in Cincinnati or something like that. And then mid-flight, they say that, oh, we're going to be redirected to Albany, New York.
No!
I'm like, oh. Yep, there it is.
It's so, not even a cool place.
I know.
It's like Albany.
It's and it's the tiniest, like, I would compare Albany to, like, as far as the size of the airport, to the size of like South Bend.
Oh wow.
Like, it's tiny. And it's the capital of New York. How is that even possible? I don't understand.
Did you have something planned in Boston that night? Like,
no.
It's something you were supposed to go to?
No, it's just like we get to the Airbnb and just chill there for the night. But I wanted to get like the traveling, like, oh, I'm so tired from riding on the plane, whatever. I wanted to get that out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to have to do that Monday morning and then like have to sleep like halfway through the day rather than actually be able to go out and see Boston. But so we get to Albany, and the lady there, I forget what her name was, but she was the Delta Airlines representative, and she said that she actually, they had just received a flight that was from Atlanta that was also going to Boston, and they weren't planning on that either. So she had just received two major flights into her, like, whatever terminal, and she was not expecting that at all. And she was like, she seemed very distressed and like, Anyway, so we get off the plane, we deboard, and I consider like, well, Boston's about 4 hours away from Albany. Like, what if we just drove? But obviously they're getting bad weather. And plus they said, well, if you want to like totally disembark, you're going to have to forfeit your bags. Like,
what do you, they'll send them later?
Yeah, something like that.
They're not going to keep them forever. Because forfeit sounds like you're never going to get them back.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Well, you might not. Because someone has to claim it. I mean, at the final destination. Mm-hmm. But anyways, but since they had our bags, we like decided not to like try to rent a car and drive there ourselves. But we stayed there until about... We landed there. Our flight was supposed to take off at 4 o'clock from Cincinnati. It ended up not taking off till like 6. And then once it finally did take off, once it finally took off, then we obviously went to Albany, and then we stayed there from like 6:45 until I'm thinking 10 o'clock. And then 10 o'clock we finally reboarded. They had gotten some pizza, so that was cool. Nice. We got free pizza from Delta, so that was nice, and some water. And the poor lady that like the Delta representative, she was like going around to everyone and asking if they needed anything. She's passing out snacks, bottles of water. The one lady had a baby. The one passenger had a baby.
While you were there?
Yes, and she was like, "We don't have any diapers." And so she had to find her...
She didn't birth the baby, though, in the terminal.
No. Okay. No. She, like, just was caring for a baby. She didn't have a baby. Yeah, this Delta Airlines lady, she was, like, some kind of Wonder Woman, I tell you what.
Delivering snacks, pizza, and a baby.
Exactly. But we finally got there. It was super late, and... Boy, I used Uber for the first time.
Mm.
And for the first time, it was a little bit awkward because I didn't quite know how it all worked. But pretty much use the app, whatever. You say that, you know, you need to go somewhere. And then the first driver that I ever called, as soon as he accepts to pick me up, he then immediately calls me. I was like, "Where are you going?" And I'm like, "South End, Boston." And he's like, "Oh, how far is that?" 20 minutes. And he's like, "Get someone else."
I used it heavily, Uber, when I was in LA. And uh-huh. I did have someone call me once for a pickup because it was at the airport and there were different levels to the airport. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to make sure I was at the spot where Uber and Lyft pick people up.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't believe he would call you and ask where you're going and then reject it.
Don't you put that in when you, like,
you do
tell them?
And we had a conversation with an Uber driver in LA, and we asked him if they know where they're going, and
when they accept
it, and from or before they accept. And from what I remember, he said that they do not know where the destination is until they accept it. But once they do accept it, they can see where you're going.
But he said he asked me to get someone else. He said that he's only going to do one more for the night. I guess he wanted to do like a quick little, I don't know, pick someone else up from the airport, whatever. But then we got another driver, whatever. He picked us up. And then he ended up taking us to almost our address. He was about 4 or 5 blocks off. And I thought we were there. We weren't. So then Carrie and I had to go the rest of the way on foot. In the middle of the night in Boston, And it was actually kind of freaky.
Yeah.
Homeless people kind of around. And we're like, they totally know that we're out of towners because, like, we have our luggage with us. Like, Kurt's like, pretend like we're locals. And it's like, we have our bags. We're dodging puddles. Like, we're all too obvious.
Was it at, like, a... Were other people around, or was it fairly deserted at this point?
It was mostly deserted. Hmm. There were a few shady characters on street corners and such, kind of like staring at us eerily.
Sizing you up.
Yep. debating whether or not it would be worth mugging us.
So how many stars did you give the driver? Did you give him a 5-star review?
I at that point, I didn't know that you could give reviews to drivers. But on that note, speaking of giving reviews, the one we ended up using Uber quite a few times in Boston. The rest of the times were much smoother than that. And the one time we were on our way to eat, and on the way there, while we were riding in the Uber, a Lamborghini passes us. And Carrie says, "Oh, babe, could we get a Lamborghini?" And I told her, "I don't think those have they're available on Uber." And the Uber driver apparently thought that was so funny. I saw him chuckling to himself. But at the end of the ride, he rated me 5 stars. I saw him do that. So if you wanna be a 5-star rider. Crack a joke.
And maybe people don't know that, but the drivers can rate the passengers.
Oh, yes.
And I was shocked to find that I didn't have a perfect score. Because I feel like I'm pretty easy to accommodate.
I don't know, Ruben. You're kind
of... And I've had a lot of rides, but I had a 4.83.
Oh, my goodness.
Is my average rating. Have you ever used Uber?
I have not.
I would like to know, Jeff and Layton are looking what their score is.
Mine's 4.67.
Okay, thank you. That makes me feel a little bit better.
Mine is a 5.0. Oh.
Can you see how many you have?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm sure it was just that one, though. Yeah. but anyways, with the honeymoon itself, once we got to the apartment and everything, that was nice. I'm pretty sure that our host was a homosexual.
The way you started that sentence, I had no clue where you were going.
Pretty sure.
What were some of the signs?
Well, he did have a book. He had a book that said, "My Life on Facebook 2016. And he had a photo book of all of his posts on Facebook. And so that's kind of neat. But it turns out that he spent quite a bit of his days on an all men's choir. Not to say that if you sing on an all men's choir, then you're probably homosexual. But it was a secular choir, number one. Number two, obviously, so it was a book about his Facebook comments. And so there was a lot of like...
So was it out on an end table for you to read?
Yeah, it was just there. It was like...
Wait, okay, was this... Were you like sharing the space or it was just like...
This was... Technically, it was like the entire house made up of 4 apartments.
Okay.
Kind of. And we were in the basement apartment.
Okay.
But you could just tell from his other Facebook posts, the one time he was like so excited to meet this other LGBTQ choir that they also sang with on their one tour of China or something. Pretty sure. Also, like, I don't know.
Was it at least very clean, the apartment?
Oh, very. Yeah, it was a very nice apartment. We really liked that. But Boston in general, there were many, many rainbow flags in front of businesses. Yeah, a lot of those.
I think it was Pride Week because we had the same similar experiences in Europe.
Okay.
June itself is Pride Month, so I don't know.
Oh, okay.
That could have been it.
And oh my goodness, Provincetown. That was a cesspool. it was full of all of that.
Is that a part of like a section of Boston?
No, Provincetown is a little town at the very tip of Massachusetts. If you notice, at the end of Massachusetts, there's a little tail that curls out. It looks like something straight out of Dr. Seuss. I mean, like that whole curl. You can take a ferry from Boston over to Provincetown. Mm. And me and Carrie did that one day. So that was really cool. They have a pilgrim monument there in Provincetown. And it's like 460 feet tall, I think.
Wow.
And oh my word, there's so many steps to get up. My legs were jelly.
So you can go inside the monument up to the top?
Yes.
Okay.
They don't have an elevator.
That was my question.
It's dumb. But it's super high up, and you can see over the entirety of Provincetown. Also, while we were there, we had lobster. It was the one place that we had lobster, and it was fresh. And it still just tastes like lobster. I don't. Some people like lobster aficionados would have been like, probably, oh, this is the best lobster ever. Oh, it's so buttery. I can taste cod bay, or whatever. I don't know.
The Cape Cod, maybe.
Atlantic Ocean salt. It's got a specific tang to it. I don't know these cod lobsters.
Now, did you have it prepared a certain way, or did they just flop a lobster and you get the bib and start like?
They claim to have some.
Even?
It was a
have
lobster.
Have you ever had lobster before?
Yes, I had it once, and it tasted the same. But I'm sure it was really good lobster. Like, I wasn't, like, sitting there thinking, like, this tastes terrible. But it wasn't, like, my taste buds have never been able to fathom this great taste before. I don't know. But it was good. I did have the clam chowder, though.
Mm.
That was good as well. I was actually pretty impressed with that. I really enjoyed that. There's also a big blue chair in Provincetown that you can, like, sit on. And it's, like, a thing, like, go sit at the big blue chair, and it's huge. Like, our feet, like, sitting in the back of this big blue lawn chair out by the beach, like, if you have your back against it, my feet didn't go off the end of it. Like, we just filled up the seat. That's it.
Nice.
It's a big blue chair. What else did we do? Oh, we saw Paul Revere's house. And we saw the Old North Church in which the lanterns hung. We saw a legit printing press. They were printing out the Declaration of Independence, of which I bought a copy of. And he said that the printer presser, the guy who runs the printing press, tile layer, no.
I don't know.
A typesetter. Yes, the typist. he was in the middle of setting the tiles out for the Constitution, and he's been at about it for about 3 years. And what's amazing is, like, tiles, like, these are just little blocks, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the font is so insanely tiny, it's crazy. But I never thought about it before. But he said that actually. And I see once he pointed it out that columns are actually very difficult, like listed, like tabbed in columns, especially ones that, like, when you have like one column and then another side by side. So let's say you have a list of names in one column, and then in the other column you have their roles or whatever you have in the second column right across from their name, and you want that second column to also have a straight edge. So if you have names, those have different lengths. And then you need to find a spacer that exactly fits from the end of that person's name to the beginning of that column so that the second column is straight still.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
oh, man.
Wow.
It's so... and with the tiles being so small, you have to make sure that everything is so tightly fitted together that you can clamp it from all sides... And there's no shifting, so that each stamp is exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
Each press, it, like, doesn't shift at all. Anyways, And he said that they've been printing the Declaration of Independence for about 3 years now, and the tiles are now getting worn down enough that it actually looks like it was printed on an old printing press. Mm. Like, so it made it more legit. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool.
Have you ever seen the actual Declaration of Independence, like at the National Archives in Washington?
Probably. Maybe. It was in D.C. many, many years ago. Okay. I don't remember it.
It's really faded. Like, you know, because you have this picture in your mind, you have the big John Hancock at the bottom, but you go and look at it, and you can barely see a lot of the writing. Like, it's very dingy and faded, and of course there's guards on both sides, and anyways, I thought that was interesting, because,
Do you think that's the real Declaration on display?
Yes.
Whatever.
Like, here's why it's faded, though, because after they signed it, they, like, took it up and tacked it up to a tree.
Those, you know what I mean?
No. I know.
How were they supposed to know that it was gonna become a thing?
Yeah.
They probably had no idea that America would become so massive and that Trump would be leading it. Like, how are they supposed to know?
That's a great question.
Well, let's just put this up against a tree because Trump's gonna lead it anyway.
Anyway, let's keep on going with your journey.
Oh, okay. What else did we see? There's an old show called Cheers. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but apparently it was a big show back in the 80s. I never actually watched it, but I had heard of it. And you can actually go to a bar that looks like the set.
And is it a running?
Yes, it is running.
It's going.
It's so loud, and they barely have any seating. But in that way, it was kind of a cool classic experience. And what was really nice there, we sat down, we ate, we bought a mug as a souvenir, and then once we were, like, all done, ready to eat, ready for a bill, the lady says, like, oh, somebody already took care of it for you. Nice. And it turns out there was an old man sitting across, like, just the next table over. He was sitting there with his family, and he had been observing us, apparently. And, yeah, he had bought us our meals. That was really cool.
What do you think struck him about the two of you?
The fact that I looked so, like, tired and just feeble.
Worn down.
pale face. And just, like, these guys are obviously outer towners. He probably doesn't even know that you can rate your Uber driver. What else did we do?
You went to a baseball game, right?
Yes, we went to Fenway Park.
Nice.
I didn't know this, but... I ordered some hot dogs because you got to have a hot dog for a classic baseball setting, whatever. And I saw, like, oh, they have these, like, foot-long dogs. And it's like, man, that's a big hot dog, but, you know, it's the hot dogs that they serve here, so I'll take those. And then I find out that you, like, that's just a choice. Like, you can also just get regular hot dogs. But, like, Carrie and I, like, stuffed ourselves full. And it was such a mess. Like, with the foot-long hot dog, they only have buns that fit a regular-sized hot dog still. And so it's like, you have to, like, lather the ends with mustard and ketchup precariously. And it's, like, pointed off. Baseball games are a risky business, let me tell you. But don't worry. If I was able to handle it, I'm sure anyone else can too. Just have to be cautious with those hot dogs. I also, while we were there, I noticed that, like, we were watching the Red Sox play, and I noticed that some of the players have different uniforms than others. And I'm like, well, but they're all on the same team. I noticed that some of them have just all white pants.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of them have red socks on up to their knees. Mm-hmm. And I was like, why is there a difference? Like, why aren't they all on the same team? And so then I asked the dude sitting beside me who was, like, very, like, he knew about baseball. Because after I asked this question, he said, first baseball game, huh? Like, yeah, pretty much. It's like, well, this is a good one to go to.
So what was his answer? What was the deal?
So I asked him, like, why do some of the players have different uniforms on? It's all the same uniform. Like, it's not, it's all the same thing. It turns out that just some of them have their socks packed their pants into the tops of their socks. So it's the same uniform. It's just a different way of wearing it.
I can see where you might be confused, because in soccer, the goalies have different uniforms on. Yeah. Totally different.
Totally.
I never would have thought about that. But it is. It's just a style.
Okay.
Choice.
Yeah. What the world? Well, nobody told me about that. One thing that's really cool about a Red Sox game is that always, either at the end of the seventh or the eighth inning, they sing a song, "Sweet Caroline,"
mm-hmm.
and like the entire crowd like jumps in and sings, like bellows out, like it's basically an entire baseball park of karaoke, and that's great. If it involves karaoke, I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really neat. But yeah, that's pretty much Fenway. Oh, what else did we see? We saw the Boston Public Library. We saw the Boston Marathon finish line. We went and took a picture there. So that was cool.
Do they have a memorial set up somewhere there, or is it just this is a street where it ends?
Well, they have like a very, like, it's at least a yard wide, maybe even 2 yards wide finish line printed on the pavement. Oh,
okay. Okay.
And it is there. Mm. And it's like, the finish line. It says finish. And it's like, I pretty much ran it. I mean, because I was at the finish line. So there you go. What else did we see? Oh, we saw an old ship called the USS Constitution. And it's actually, its nickname is Old Ironsides, which I'm sure you've heard of.
Yes.
I think I've heard of it before. And we saw this old ship, and they have a museum for it. And
but is it out on the water?
Well, it was docked right where the museum is. But technically, it is a part of the U.S. Navy.
Hmm.
Like, it's still enlisted, but it's pretty much just a showboat. a pun was intended. But because it is a part of the Navy, they have, like, actual enlisted soldiers, like, running the ship.
Hmm.
They had some of the Marines? Is that what they're called?
I don't think...
Midshipmen?
Sailors.
Sailors is what Navy they'd sailors. Probably be called.
They had people in uniform.
That weren't just your...
taking... up and down flags, folding them up nicely, and you do have to, like, go through, like, a checkpoint. You have to get scanned through a metal detector before you can go on. But you can go on and tour the ship. I took some sweet pictures. That was neat. Oh, and we also went to, like, a really, really legit dinner called Eat Like a Sailor, Dine Like a Captain. And it was kind of like a... showing, like, the contrast how the sailors ate compared to how Captain ate back in the olden days. Also, a lot of background on alcohol. They gave us a lot in that
dinner party.
Yeah, they just, like, shared a lot of history on that. Everybody was, like, interested. Oh, that's where the rum came from. Huh. It started in Ireland. Huh. How neat.
Now, was this on the ship?
No, this wasn't on a ship. Okay. This was just like a dinner party. It was a dinner party at a local farmer's market, which is kind of neat. But yeah, the Boston Public Market, that's really cool. That's like, that was pretty much like, what's this thing out on 20? Or like close
American
to 20?
American Countryside?
Yeah. It's pretty much like that, except in the middle of Boston. It's like fresh ingredients, and it's like full, it's a bunch of these little vendors. It's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the one venue that they had there is called The Kitchen, and it's pretty much like a massive kitchen on one side, and then there's like a place there for tables and stuff. And some of the local community workers set up this dinner party. And we actually met a guy who's the head of communications and social media manager for the Museum of the USS Constitution.
Mm. So you made some connections.
Oh, yeah. He gave me his card. He was super liberal. Super liberal. He was like saying how, the day that Trump won the election, he obviously felt just devastated. Devastated. And just, so discouraged. But then as he thought about it, he felt so comforted in the fact that he was still in a place like Boston, surrounded by like-minded people. It gave him hope that, the country isn't in complete disarray.
Middle America is, but not Boston.
The flyover states like Indiana are just...
do they know?
Just a bunch of hicks.
Yeah, exactly. They know nothing of the finer things in life. Oh, yes. But yeah. Oh, also at that dinner party, they had a violinist. Mm-hmm. He was very good at playing, and he also had one of those things that you squeeze in and out that like
accordion.
Yeah, those. Yeah.
How did they go?
Did he play both at the same time?
No.
That would be impressive.
That would. But yeah, that's. I mean, I'm sure there's things that I'm forgetting. But
well, if things come up, you can just pitch in. I'll
spout them out randomly.
Jeff, I feel like we should give you some airtime now.
Yeah, let's hear about Europe.
So push button. I feel like you need to scoot over to give Jeff a little more space. My.
Well, I won't talk much about Europe this time. Maybe next week's podcast I'll give a little larger definition or describe more of what we did. But anyways, Europe was really cool.
You took some awesome photos. I saw them on Instagram.
I did, and I have quite a few more awesome photos that I just haven't gotten to yet.
You had promised listeners that, hey, at some point, some of these photos you're going to offer them for people to buy prints if they want to.
Yeah.
What are we talking about, a week from now or a month from now?
I'm gonna try to have a couple for sale maybe in the next 2 weeks or so. It's going to take a little bit of time just to get everything around, figure out which ones I want to sell. Some or quite a few I still have to edit. I think I took over probably close to 4,000 or 5,000 pictures.
Oh, Jeff.
That I have to go through. And so a lot of them are, duplicates and multiple angles and all that kind of stuff. So I have to pick out the best ones that I want to, and narrowing it down to a small selection is going to take some time.
How much processing do you do on these photos? You obviously set up, you try to hold the camera straight or however you want it, get maybe some good light or good angle. After you take the photo, how much editing or processing goes into a photo?
It varies quite a bit. So like if you're following me on Instagram, you would have seen my picture from Venice, which is like... it's a storefront right on the canal. There's a little bridge next to it. Really cool. That one took me maybe 10, 15 minutes of post-editing to get that like I wanted it.
The one that says Verde Company? That one?
This one.
Oh.
It's my second to last one that I posted. That's about average. But then some photos like this one here, this is of a bridge. In Florence, Italy, that one is actually a panorama, and I think I had 20 or 30 photos spliced together to make this one.
Hold
because it was so far away, and I used my super telephoto lens, and it turned out really well, really, really nice. But that one took half an hour to 40 minutes. I had to wait around on my computer to process all that, and I actually ended up doing it a couple of times to get it right. So it varies quite a bit, but most of them don't take super long to do.
And are you still planning to offer some photos for people to download to use as their desktop or phone background?
Yes, definitely. Okay. Definitely. And I have some that'll look really nice on that. I also have some that'll look nice on the wall. So
you need to have some prints ready for when we do our live podcast.
Yes.
So if someone is interested, they can see it in person and maybe even buy it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Did you...
Go ahead.
I was going to ask you, how much did you want to talk about Europe.
I don't think I'll go much on it tonight because I could go for a long time. We spent 2 weeks there and did a lot.
We should save it for next week.
That's what I was thinking too, because I feel like this podcast is there's a lot of good content in here already.
Yeah.
I did want to mention we ate a lot of good food over there. And Italy had a lot more pizza than I thought it would. I thought that, you know, it wasn't that much of a local thing, but there's quite a bit of pizza over there. And it's really good too. But one of my favorite things from over there is Nutella, or it's actually Nutella.
And originates in Italy?
That comes from Italy. They do, the Nutella you buy here in the U.S. is actually manufactured in Canada, but the main company is still in Italy, and they have a lot more Nutella products over there. McDonald's has donuts stuffed with Nutella.
No way.
And Nutella muffins, and there's Nutella gelato everywhere. I mean, it is a huge thing over there. But one of my favorite things...
We
need to go to Italy.
Yes. Was these biscuits, and I brought some for everybody. Called Nutella Be Ready, and you can buy them on Amazon. They're a little expensive because they're imported from Italy. But it's basically... It's this breadstick that is stuffed with Nutella, and they're quite good.
That is really good, Jeff.
So I brought.
I approve.
I always feel bad when I'm on vacation. I feel like I do a bad job at bringing things back for people to enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
But you did well, Jeff. You're an inspiration.
I am not much of a gift buyer for people.
Well,
I bought my brother a mug, and that was it. But I did bring 9 boxes of these back home.
Mm.
That's all I could fit in my luggage.
It kind of reminds me of like an ice cream cone,
mm-hmm.
but gently wrapped around mm-hmm. a little fluff of Nutella.
Mm. I really do like Nutella, but I don't feel like I've just jumped into the
craze,
the vibrant community. Yeah.
I think after spending time over there, I've gained more of an appreciation for it, just because they have it in everything, and you begin to realize how good it actually is compared to other ingredients. Like a breakfast place we went, they had a croissant that was just stuffed with Nutella, and it was just really good. It's like peanut butter except with chocolate. Mm-hmm. It's just smoother and it's just better.
Is there any weird ingredients in it, or is it basically chocolate?
It's chocolate and hazelnut. It's like hazelnut butter with chocolate in it. Interestingly enough, they do not have any candy with peanuts over there that I saw. I could not find any candy that had peanuts in it, but they have hazelnuts in everything. And so Nutella is a hazelnut-based kind of a peanut butter type thing.
Are peanuts something that they would have to import
over there? I mean, I would imagine that they could, you know, grow them over there.
Mm-hmm.
They obviously do here in the States, but yeah, I don't know.
Hmm. What was one of the biggest, like, was there anything just culturally that was really different? You know, I mean, just like everyday life that you're like, whoa, that's very different than...
I'm going to say driving was different, definitely.
Did you drive while you were there?
I did drive over there. I did not drive in the UK, which is the only country or the only area where they drive on the wrong side of the road or the left side of the road. But I did drive in France and in Italy, and I will say drivers in France, the driving over there is they just have a different mindset. Like you see countries like Haiti, you know, where the driving is just crazy. People just go as fast as they want, and they seem to be reckless. But and then here in the U.S., everybody wants their space. You know, in driving, you get too close to somebody, they honk at you. But over there, it's just kind of, drivers are constantly aware of everything around them. They pay very close attention to people around them, and they squeeze through tight spaces. The parking spaces are like probably a foot and a half less in width than ours over here. And most of the vehicles, when you turn them off, the mirrors fold in by themselves to accommodate for that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, and they're a lot more precise in their driving. And they stick to the rules better, I think. Like, you would never pass somebody on the right side on a highway over there. You just wouldn't.
You mean if they were lazy over in the left lane, they would never just go around them on the right.
Right. They come up behind them and flash their lights or something, and people get over. They do. You know, they see somebody coming up behind them, they just get over. They're just a lot more technical like that. But then you have in Paris especially these crazy traffic circles. I don't know if you've ever seen videos of them. But look up videos of the Arc de Triomphe on YouTube. It is crazy. They have a massive, massive traffic circle. There's probably, I'm going to say, 6 to 8 roads going into it, and there are no signs or signals or anything. And it's probably the equivalent of 6 lanes wide the whole way around.
And did you drive through it?
I did not. Although I almost wish now that I would have. But at the time, I didn't understand the rules of the road over there as well, so I felt kind of uncomfortable doing it. But basically, they have a rule over there, and pretty much throughout all of Europe, especially the southern countries, but it's called priority to the right. And so basically, when you're entering a traffic circle, you or anything that's a non-marked intersection, whoever is to the right of you has priority over you. So if you come up to a crossroad, if there's somebody coming from the right, you give them priority. So like on this big traffic circle, the people coming into the traffic circle have priority over the people that are already in the traffic circle. Mm. And so if you watch videos of it, you'll notice this. And there's like a constant stream of cars coming in. But it almost seems like there's less cars going out, which in reality is not. You just don't notice them as much.
Yeah.
And the people that are sitting in between the roads coming in are just kind of sitting there waiting for a chance to get into oncoming traffic. It's really interesting. It's actually very simple, I think, once you get used to it, but it's just different.
And it almost seems like that does make a lot of sense, because then you don't have this giant like swirling circle of traffic, you know, that everyone's waiting for.
Trying to darn.
And they also have, there's also bus and taxi lanes, which is like actually a separate road. That's either, they either have in where was it? In Rome, they had the bus and taxi lane in the center. It was like a divided 4-lane highway through the middle of town. And the bus and taxi lane was its own street in between the two. And there was actually trams that ran down there. There's like a rail, the trams ran on that. And you're not allowed to drive on it unless you're a bus or a taxi. And then in France, they had the bus and taxi lanes on the outside of the main road. So you had to be watching out when you were turning right or left. You had to watch out, you know, there's people also on a separate street right next to you. And for that reason, when there is a controlled traffic circle, like with stoplights, you can't make a right. You can't get onto the traffic circle and immediately exit to the right. You have to go all the way around the traffic circle. And then there's a stoplight on the traffic circle. You have to wait for oncoming traffic and for that side street to clear out, and then you can go. So you have to, like, in order to turn right...
I can't picture it in my head, but I might need to watch a video.
So in order to turn right, you would need to go around all the way around the traffic circle and then exit straight off of the traffic circle. Yeah, it's interesting. Wow. So anyways, but yeah, it was definitely a cool experience.
So, all right. Very good. Mr. Dave, anything else from you before we wrap up?
Don't think so.
Leighton, what's our word of the day?
Oh. Word of the day, I think, is going to be... oh, man. I'm torn between balloon and Nutella. But I think we'll go with Nutella. Sorry, Mr. Dave.
That's all right. That's all right.
Oh, by the way, Ruben, do you know what today is?
What is today?
It's Prime Day!
Prime Day.
Prime Day.
What is Prime Day?
Gotta get down on Prime Day.
Prime Day is the day that Amazon has Prime. it's the day that Amazon has deemed as the perfect day to mark their stuff just a little bit lower, their products a little bit lower. They have deals all day on Prime Day.
Okay, do you know why it's called Prime Day?
Because it's deals that are only available to people that are that.
No, but why did they pick Amazon today?
Prime? Why is the 11th?
Because I don't know.
Today's day 7, 11, both are prime numbers.
See, that's why we have a former, not former, that's why we have a teacher on the podcast.
By the way, Jeff, do you remember that little router that you did a review of?
Yes.
It's on sale!
What?
I know!
Speaking of which, I used that heavily over in Europe. It was an awesome battery pack. And with the added feature of being able to plug my external hard drive into it, I have a battery, or anyhow, and access files on it from my phone, so I could look at the pictures that I had saved to my hard drive on my phone directly. It was pretty cool.
And is the price, do you remember what you paid for it? Is it a good deal, Jeff?
Well, it's technically it's not on sale quite yet. It starts in about 8 minutes.
In 8 minutes. This is the price I paid for it on here right now.
$40.
But
in 8 minutes.
It is going on sale in 8 minutes.
Ruben, quick post.
The problem is no one will be able to listen to this in time to get that sale.
This is true.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. We will be back next week. And I guess usually we end on Layton saying the word of the week.
Oh, yeah.
But
sorry.
Since we went on, maybe you can just say it again.
Okay. Nutella.